We expect shortly to talk to Charles Kambanda. He is a law professor. He's a lawyer. I shouldn't say law professor. I'm not absolutely certain on that point. He has been writing really lucid accounts of the situation in Rwanda and of course, more recent, this developing crisis in Burundi. And he's very enlightening material, and you can go to the Rwandan. Just look it up, therwandan.org, and you will find the writings of Charles Kambanda, and I think he has joined us now. Are you there, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Nice to hear from you, and we're glad we reached you. You published a seminal kind of piece for if anybody wants to understand the episode that we're living through now in Burundi, where there was an attempted coup, and there seemed to be a lot of sympathy abroad for this, and everyone's focusing on the issue which you identified, this one of, does the president, Mr. Nkurunziza, is he legally enabled to run for a second term? And you really clearly addressed that, and I want to thank you about that, for that. And let's just start with this. What's your take on the issue itself? Where do you come down on this matter of can he seek a second term by an election, or is he excluded as your understanding of the Burundian constitution?
Yes. We are discussing the issue of whether or not a person qualifies to become a president of a nation. We are discussing a legal issue. It's a legal right and a legal issue. Therefore, we must always have a law, a specific law, we point at and say this law allows X or allows B to become a president or not. Mm-hmm. So in this case, we have to look at the supreme law of the land, of Burundi, and that is the constitution. Now, the problem is some people say that on this issue, we are not looking at the constitution only. We are looking at the Arusha Agreement. Mm-hmm. And that is now the beginning of the problem. My analysis is clear. The Arusha Agreement has never been law, was never enacted into law in Burundi. That's number one. Number two, the Arusha Agreement terminated by its own terms. Mm-hmm. The Arusha Agreement, any agreement, whenever we are looking at an agreement, in this context, we eliminate the possibility that the Arusha Agreement was a treaty, was an agreement between states. So it was an agreement between parties within Burundian political setting. We have the civil society organizations, we have politicians coming together and negotiating a deal. That deal comes under contract law. It is a contract. The Arusha Agreement was a contract between the parties that signed that agreement. Mm-hmm. And clearly so, the protocol to the Arusha Agreement sets up the implementation plan. And it even sets up in its Article 3, it sets up a committee which was supposed to make sure that each party performs according to the terms of the agreement. Mm-hmm. And that Article number 3 is clear that at the end, after every party has performed its part of the bargain, the committee would be dissolved.
Yes, and by the way, just for clarification. So, in other words, they all the parties sat down. They agreed on a transitional process, which was completed. If I think the word you use is it was implemented. So it's kind of like the first stage of the rocket drops off, and it goes on by itself, right, under its own power.
Absolutely, because if anybody has doubt about that, I would encourage them to read the secretary, the UN secretary general in September 2005. The United Nations Secretary General reported to the Security Council that all parties to Burundi's agreement have performed their part of the bargain completely. And he, therefore, asked the Security Council to dissolve the committee, which was created under Protocol Number 5, or the 5th Protocol to the Arusha Agreement.
Was it then dissolved? What was the standing of that?
Sorry?
He said that now they could dissolve that group, right?
Yes, it was dissolved.
It was dissolved.
It was dissolved.
So how can people be talking about reopening it and talking as though the Arusha Agreement exists when it's already been implemented?
Absolutely. That defeats every basic law, every basic principle of contract law. Because every time you have, if every time a contract terminates, if you want to call the parties back into this contract, you must provide them with an offer. They must accept that offer. And then you negotiate, and you have a new contract. But what's happening in this case, people are telling the Burundian government to implement a contract that terminated by its terms. Uh-huh. And they are not telling the parties to go back to the negotiation table and negotiate a new contract. How do you implement that terminated by its terms without creating a new contract?
Yeah.
So this is exactly what people are telling the Burundian government. It is impossible. Now,
yes, I think in the term you use, you say it's by doing so, they're creating an imaginary crisis.
Absolutely. It is an imaginary crisis because people are saying the reason we have this crisis is because the Burundi government has refused to implement the Arusha Agreement. But there is no such a thing as Arusha Agreement today. What there is, and I agree with that there is a legacy. The Arusha Agreement now stands as a moral, we have some moral principles from the Arusha Agreement, because every aspect of Burundian history has become as some moral authority. To the extent the agreement, the Arusha Agreement, was negotiated by Burundians from different groups, then there is something that remained in the legacy of that agreement. Now, the question is, how do you expect the government to implement a set of moral dictates? Because Arusha Agreement is not a law. Mm-hmm. And moreover, you are telling the government that the Arusha Agreement, which terminated, is above Burundi's constitution. This defeats the concept of sovereignty.
Yes.
How can a sovereign state be ruled by a law, an abstract law, that is not written anywhere, and you tell them that that is beyond their constitution?
Yeah.
It's like telling them.
That's an excellent question, of course, which apparently the people who think they have the answers are in Washington and London and Paris, of all places, and some are in Kigali. We're speaking to Charles Kambanda. The title of the article is Burundi's Current Turmoil. Is it a constitutional crisis or complex political and economic issues? It's published, and that's May 22nd. It's in The Rwandan. By the way, you're listening to The Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And let's you have been clarifying, in my view, with your writing, the key issues here. I want to ask you about some of the sort of maybe the secondary aspects of this matter. But there was a man from the Supreme Court of Burundi who turned up. I call him a man. I don't know. I guess he's a judge. Anyway, he turned up in Rwanda, of all places, and made a statement that, well, it wasn't done properly. The Supreme Court did decide in Burundi that, yes, the president could run. Now, he says that they were coerced, et cetera. But your observation is that he didn't even write a decision himself. If he didn't like it, where's his decision?
Yes.
He is a judge. I mean, I'm not trying to tell him his work, but you'd think he would have written out a nice legal argument before he began to give interviews in Kigali.
As a judge who was on the bench, on the Constitutional Court bench, if he disagreed with other judges, he has a right, or he had a right, to write a dissenting opinion. He did not write anything like that. What he says is that the judges were under pressure from the government to make that. And what is the ruling? The ruling is clear that under Burundi's constitution, the President Nkurunziza has no problem. He's allowed to stand for office. Mm-hmm. And that is the only logical conclusion. That's the only legal conclusion you could make from the Burundi's constitution. Now, if this judge was really concerned about justice, I believe he should have written his dissenting opinion to show us his legal reasoning for not supporting the rest of the bench. Mm-hmm. What he did was to go into and write it, so as you put it, of all places, he went to Kigali. And from Kigali, he says, the judges were under pressure in Burundi to make that ruling.
Yes.
My question is, does this judge want us to believe his statements without a reasoning? And what is his legal reasoning for his dissenting opinion? Nothing.
Yes.
So he leaves us to guess why he left.
Yes. Well,
and then the
mm-hmm.
question of the country to which he fled is also suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, of course, it's rather enlightening for this whole matter that he's sitting, now he's in a country which is also involved with the expression Arusha Accord, Arusha Agreement. And my impression is that the Arusha Agreement was never implemented for Rwanda, that the country is governed by a gentleman who is a former general who doesn't allow demonstrations, doesn't allow independent radio, doesn't allow independent political people to oppose him. As a matter of fact, he's associated, we were told, with assassination. So do you find that a kind of an ironic situation?
It is weird.
I think I like that word better. You're right.
It is weird because Rwanda had an Arusha agreement. All these people telling Nkurunziza to implement the Arusha agreement know for a fact that Rwanda wrote a new constitution under Kagame regime. They brought an end. They stopped even talking about the Arusha agreement. He did not implement anything of the Arusha agreement. And when he created his own constitution, it all stopped there. He went into what he called a sustainable governance. And he argued that the Arusha agreement was a transitional agreement, which could not continue after the constitution, the 2003 constitution of Rwanda. Now, people accepted this argument from, but they don't want to accept the same for Burundi. The Burundi also, the Arusha agreement for Burundi was transition. The transition period ended. And moreover, this Arusha agreement had termination terms. Now, after all that, after the transition government, in the transition period in Burundi, people are telling the government of Burundi to implement a transitional agreement. This doesn't work. Why don't we ask the same of Kagame? Mm. Why don't we tell Kagame to implement the Arusha agreement? Kagame's answer is very simple.
You could be arrested for that.
Of course, you would be killed. If you are lucky to be arrested, you are lucky. You would be beheaded.
You speak that English better than I do.
Yes, he beheads you immediately, kills you, and nobody says anything about that. So we are talking of a situation where people are openly and like unfair. And why do you ask this of Nkurunziza and don't ask the same of Kagame? Now, I've heard people saying that they are asking President Nkurunziza and his government to respect the free press, to respect the media, and to respect the rights of demonstrators. But all these things do not happen in Burundi, in Rwanda. In Rwanda, there is no free press. There are no private radios or private newspapers. They are not there. They just kill you if you start to work. They don't allow demonstrations. It's a crime in Rwanda to hold demonstrations. Now, Nkurunziza, on the other hand, allows free press. Some of these radios were used by people who overthrew the government for some hours.
Yes.
These people were allowed by some of these radios to go and announce the coup from their private radios. Now, the government comes in as a way of overtaking, of regaining power. They close some of these radios, and then there is noise everywhere that there is no respect for free press in Burundi. Mm-hmm. Come on. Why do we have this double standard?
Yes. And not only are they double standards, they are permitted to call these radio stations independent when it turns out Mr. Bernard Lévy from France is a principal who set up one of the radio stations called Renaissance, and there was a second one that Samantha Powers, the American representative of the United Nations, has a direct link to. One of her proteges runs that station. And that, by the way, was the one where the man announced his coup.
Exactly. And not only that, but also the same radio, there is alleged that President Kagame is one of the sponsors of that radio. And remember, when they were pushing this radio, they went to Rwanda. The radio station is in Rwanda for some time. Mm-hmm. They are broadcasting from Rwanda just recently. Now, the question is this radio independent as we are told to believe? Because we are just being told that it's an independent radio. But how is it independent when it receives overthrowing the government to make announcements from there? Is there any country like in France where treason is a case, is a criminal case, where a person would overthrow the government of France and he goes to make an announcement on one of the private radios in France, and that radio is not closed indefinitely in France?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, they would close it in 2 seconds, and they would put everybody in jail associated with that station.
Yeah, even in the United States, under the United States law, if somebody overthrows the government of the United States and he announces or he works with a certain radio station and the government is able to regain power after some time, that radio would be in a problem. That radio station would close. Now, they are saying Nkurunziza should, the government of Burundi should just fold their arms and say to these radios which hosted the coup plotters, just say them thank you for the work well done. That's not how a supreme, that's not how a sovereign state works.
Yes.
So what we are seeing in case, Burundi case, is we are seeing double standards.
Oh,
and I don't know the cause of this double standard. But again, as I ended my paper on a different note, there are serious political and economic issues that we have to address if we want to understand the cause of the crisis in Burundi.
Indeed, and particularly I would say there's also a media crisis, because the article that you have written is not widely available, but it's quite clear and would be a perfect starting point for a rational discussion of what is taking place. But instead, we're getting all this talk. And as a matter of fact, a good demonstration of how they are falsifying the story of Burundi, you raise the issue, and again, it's in the Rwandan, of people being called demonstrators. And you say, well, they don't look like demonstrators. They look like people carrying weapons. They look like people burning things. Isn't that a riot? That's not a demonstration, right? That's a riot.
Absolutely. For demonstrations remain a type of speech. They are speech as long as they are demonstrations. If they are, the moment they turn into riots, they are not called demonstrations. Riots are different than a demonstration. What we are seeing in Burundi, the so-called demonstrators are burning people to death. They are burning private and government property.
Mm-hmm.
They are armed. We have seen rioters armed. And moreover, most of these people on the streets as demonstrators are children. This is a very serious issue. I was surprised that UNICEF has not come up clearly on them.
Yes, where is Amnesty and Human Rights Watch on this issue? Because, as you point out, children don't really appear spontaneously. Somebody has induced that, caused that to happen.
Yes, because remember, there are images from from Burundi showing the sponsors of the demonstrations providing food and water to prisoners. Some of these demonstrators are children, and they are still given food and water in Israel to go back to the streets and demonstrate.
Mm-hmm.
This is serious. These people who are organizing the demonstrations have control over the so-called demonstrators, and some of them are children. Most of them actually are children. Why doesn't the world stand for the protection of the children whenever an issue touches or concerns children? The first thing we look at is the interest of the child.
Mm-hmm.
And child endangerment is a crime.
Mm-hmm.
It's not different from using children or recruiting children into armed groups. We have armed rioters in Burundi who have recruited children. Nobody talks about that. These are very serious human rights issues.
Yes, and to characterize call a riot and criminal behavior, to call it a demonstration, shows that the media are not actually doing their job. They are falsifying the event.
Both the media and the politicians who have got their personal interest in crisis in Burundi are wrong on this. The right name, the proper name for what is happening on the streets in Burundi is not demonstration.
Mm-hmm.
These are riots. Or even if you want, it is a civil war.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have people with guns. Some people have got knives. People are armed. So how would you call that demonstration?
Mm-hmm.
Except if the English language dictionary has changed.
Yeah, but, and by the way, this is an environment we should remind people, and your article does, there are opposition parties, they are legal, And they can run for office. We're not talking about people who are deprived of the opportunity any other way. We understand demonstrations when people have no political outlet. But there are a number of parties with prominent leaders who are urging people to participate in riots when they won't participate in an election.
And they are telling the government of Burundi to respect rioters. This is the first time I've heard government telling another government to respect rioters. Mm-hmm. How do you expect the government, the police has obligation to protect the not only the life but the property in mm-hmm. Burundi, and you are telling them to watch, to look on as these people are burning people, as the so-called demonstrators are burning down buildings, as the so-called demonstrators are burning the cars, they are burning buses, mm-hmm. and you call these demonstrations? I don't understand this.
Yeah. Well, it's politics, as you would aptly have pointed out in your article. This is Charles Gambanda. Now, you raise another issue, which we've noted on this program. We talked to a number of people about it. The International Criminal Tribunal, the ICC, for some curious reason, they issued a statement before actually the Supreme Court of Burundi had made its judgment known. The ICC began to talk about how they might intervene or take up a case. And you've written about it. I urge people to go to the Rwandan.org. But tell us your view of the role of the ICC in creating problems in Burundi.
Yes, this is another ridiculous thing. The International Court warned the President Nkurunziza about 3 days after the demonstrations started. The International Criminal Court warned Nkurunziza of the crime they say he is prepared to commit. For the first time in history, we have had a person being told that he is suspected of doing, it is believed that he is going to commit a crime.
A thought
How
crime.
How do you accuse a person of a crime which he has not even committed?
Yeah.
So the International Criminal Court is of the crime his government had not yet committed, but they were accusing him of those crimes, and they were telling him that it has consequences. In criminal law, Nowhere could a person be accused of crimes he has not committed yet. Otherwise, you would be accusing him of even his foot, or even of your own imagination projected it to him, and you think that he is going to commit a crime. That is exactly what the International Criminal Court did.
Yeah, that is a great embarrassment for people who use the term international community. We have a court, wouldn't you regard that as almost an incitement? Because anyone opposing the government she's addressing when she makes that statement would feel that this is an opportunity to create a crisis, because she's already said she will act. All you have to do is create a demonstration / riots, and she says she'll come in.
And interestingly, now established law that it's not only the government that can be held liable for crimes in such insurgencies, but also non-state parties could be held liable. Unfortunately, the International Criminal Court was courageous to imagine the crimes Nkurunziza was going to commit, which he did not commit. When the rioters committed those crimes, which they against mm-hmm. government, the International Criminal Court did not come back. Rioters committing crimes that genuinely under the international criminal jurisdiction. They didn't say that, meaning that the International Criminal Court intervention in this case was purely political.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you pointed out Uganda, they fire on people. People are shot by the police openly. You have a government that we've lost count on the number of times it's been elected or put in power, and nobody says anything. And the ICC certainly never does. They have nothing to say about the government of Rwanda. But Burundi, they are there with their flashlight and their handcuffs ready to go to work.
Yes, unfortunately, Uganda is the number one U.S. ally. President Museveni is, U.S. agent in that region. Mm-hmm. What is interesting is President Museveni is doing, I think, the fifth term, if not the sixth term in office. The United States, which is condemning Nkurunziza for what he called the third term, has never said a word about President Museveni's fifth term. Mm-hmm. Museveni, even last week, in the middle of the riots in Burundi, as they were asking Burundi, the Burundian government, to respect media and the demonstrators, in Uganda, President Museveni was beating political opponents on the street. He was spraying them with the paper spray. He was beating them up, breaking their hands, breaking their legs. Nobody said a word. They never talked about the violence Museveni was doing last week against the opposition.
Yes.
But the same country was condemning Nkurunziza, meaning that even within these so-called developed countries, there is something, there's a hidden agenda on Burundi, especially when it comes to what we call the Western allies. There is conspiracy. I believe there's a conspiracy to sideline the government of Burundi for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Could you, in the last question here, that Mr. Kagame and actually the leaders of the RPF throughout have had an attitude towards Nkurunziza an attitude about Burundi. What is their motivation here? For example, hosting the judge and even Kagame kind of shocking the world by claiming that if the people don't want you, you should leave, as though he would do that if anybody asked him to leave. So what's he up to with Mr. Nkurunziza? Why does he want to remove him?
There are some historical reasons. First of all, when Kagame was still a rebel fighting of the then Hutu government in Burundi, in Rwanda, there are some Tutsi generals who hosted Kagame's radio station called Muhabura.
Muhabura.
That radio station was operating from Burundi. The president of Burundi that time was Hutu, but all the senior officers, the army was run by the Tutsi. Now, this Hutu president Ndadaye ordered the Tutsi army officers to close Kagame's radio station, which was in Burundi. This did not go down well with Kagame. Mm-hmm. That is why Kagame organized for Ndadaye's assassination in 1993. That was followed by horrible, terrible crimes, which I believe qualify to be called genocide.
Mm-hmm.
The Tutsi generals, with the help of Kagame in Burundi, exterminated the Hutu. And that is why now the Hutu who ran away, including Nkurunziza, from those massacres, went to form rebel groups. which are now the people who ran out from Kagame's massacres that time, and now the ones are believed to be in power, including Nkurunziza. Now, Kagame has a grudge with Nkurunziza. He prefers to have a person he could control in a Burundi, so that he rules Burundi through another person. But Nkurunziza cannot accept this. And Nkurunziza has an army. He has a strong military army. So Kagame cannot use Nkurunziza to rule Burundi. So Nkurunziza is an obstacle to Kagame's move to dominate Burundi, because Musa Kagame wants to control Burundi to do business, wants to become the sole contractor for Burundi's government. He also wants to use Burundi as an entry point into Congo's wealth. Because when you look at the southern Kivu, Burundi has control over the border with Congo in the south. So that Kagame wants to use the Burundian border with Congo as an exit or entry point for the natural resources from Congo.
Wow. Go ahead.
What to do?
Yeah. We've been speaking, of course, Charles Kambanda. The article is Burundi's Current Turmoil. Is it a constitutional crisis or complex political and economic issues? And he's shown that it is political and economic. The article is published at Rwandan.org, May 22nd. Charles Kambanda, boy, it's been a pleasure talking to you. It's very enlightening. Terrific article. And thank you again very much. I think we lost him. He didn't get a chance to say goodbye, but we did.
I felt one correction. That's the Rwandan.com.
The Rwandan.
The Rwandan.com.
Really? I thought it was .org.
Yeah, I know.
You're right.
The Rwandan.com.
Well, if you went to org, you're out of luck. I didn't mean to throw you off. .com. Thank you, Phil Conlon. And I remind you again, coming up on Sunday the 14th at 2 p.m., Beth Satoon, 612 Markham Street. And it's going to be speakers David Heap and Robert Lovelace. And Robert Lovelace is a member of the Ardoc Algonquin First Nation. We're unable to reach him today. Our apologies. Canadian delegate on freedom. He's going to be a delegate on the Freedom Flotilla 3, which is shaping up. It's going to be an interesting summer, as they say, Freedom Flotilla 3. Dr. Lovelace is a professor and activist in global development studies at Queen's University. And again, it's Sunday, June 14 at 2 p.m. at Beth Satoon. And you're listening to the Taylor Report. It's CIUT 89.5 FM. I think the FIFA issue has been solved. If you want to know, Phil, we could share with people the fact that who knew that the problems of FIFA and international sport could be solved by the FBI? Isn't that great?
Well, of course. The FBI knew it.
an American police department looks into a sport they don't play and decides who gets to be the leader. And
they've already announced that, of course, Russia and Qatar will have to give up their games. They don't have any evidence yet, but they're sure they're going to find it.
Yeah, we will exactly arrest that man and we'll find the evidence and make sure he doesn't get a lawyer. Yes, because for national security. It is let's just be frank. The Cold War is on, and they do not want Russia to have these international games. And why not? Well, because they say. That's the reasoning. You don't need to know any more than that. And they use American police department on a – this is not their jurisdiction, as people point out to them. And then they – but if you ask them, it turns out their jurisdiction goes around the globe. And so the only thing that can save us now is their ineptitude, which will turn up. You're listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Thanks for Conlon. Thanks, Henny. Thanks, Lucas, and we'll see you next week.